and Katza wouldn't break from the grip of his fingers, for she didn't need to. Her rise to her feet had been enough. The room froze into stillness. The man dropped the girl's arm. He stared at Katza with a white face and an open mouth. Fear, as familiar to Katza as the feel of her own body. The girl stared too, and caught her breath and pressed her hand to her chest.
Sit down, Katza.
Poe's voice was low.
It's over now. Sit down.
She did sit down. The room let out its breath. After a few moments, voices murmured and then talked and laughed again. But Katza wasn't sure that it was over. Perhaps it was over with this girl and these merchants, but there would be a new group of merchants tomorrow, and these merchants would move on and find themselves another girl. Later that evening, as Katza prepared for bed, two girls came to her room to cut her hair.
Is it too late, my lady?
Asked the elder, who carried scissors and a brush.
No. The sooner I have it off, the better. Please, come in.
They were young, younger than the serving girl. The younger, a child of 10 or 11 years, carried a broom and a dustpan. They sat Katza down and moved around her shyly. They spoke little. Breathless around her, not quite frightened, but near to it. The older girl untied Katza's hair and began to work her fingers through the tangle.
Forgive me if I hurt you, my lady.
It won't hurt me. And you needn't unravel the knots. I want you to cut it all off. As short as you can. As short as a man's.
The eyes of both girls widened.
I've cut the hair of many men.
The older girl said.
You may cut mine just as you've cut theirs. The shorter you cut it, the happier I'll be.
The scissors snipped around Katza's ears, and her head grew lighter and lighter. How odd to turn her neck and not feel the pull of hair, the heavy snarl swinging around behind her. The younger girl held the broom and swept the hair clippings away the instant they fell to the floor.
Is it your sister I saw serving drinks in the eating room?
Yes, my lady.
How old is she?
16, my lady.
And you?
I'm 14, and my sister 11, my lady.
Katza watched the younger girl collecting hair with a broom taller than she was.
Does anyone teach the girls of the inn to protect themselves? Do you carry a knife?
Our father protects us, and our brother,
the girl said simply. The girls clipped and swept, and Katza's hair fell away. She thrilled at the unfamiliar chill of air on her neck, and wondered if other girls in Sunder and across the Seven Kingdoms carried knives, or if they all looked to their fathers and brothers for every protection. A knock woke her. She sat up. It came from the door that adjoined her room to Poe's. She hadn't been asleep long, and it was midnight. And enough moonlight spilled through her window so that if it wasn't Poe who knocked, and if it was an enemy, she could see well enough to beat the person senseless. All these thoughts swept through her mind in the instant she sat up.
Katza, it's only I,
his voice called, through the keyhole.
It's a double lock. You must unlock it from your side.
She rolled out of bed. And where was the key?
My key was hanging beside the door, he called.
And she took a moment to glare in his general direction.
I only guessed you were looking for the key. It wasn't my grace, so you needn't get all huffy about it.
Katza felt along the wall. Her fingers touched a key.
Doesn't it make you nervous to holler like that? Anyone could hear you. You could be revealing your precious grace to a whole legion of my lovers.
His laughter came muffled through the door.
I would know if anyone heard my voice. And I'd also know if you were in there with a legion of lovers. Katza, have you cut your hair?
She snorted.
Wonderful. That's just wonderful. I've no privacy, and you sense even my hair.
She turned the key in the lock and swung the door open. Poe straightened, a candle in his hand.
Great seas!
What do you want?
He held his candle up to her face.
Poe, what do you want?
She did a far better job than I would have done.
I'm going back to bed,
Katza said, and she reached for the door.
All right, all right. The men, the merchants, the Sunderin men who were bothering that girl. I think they intend to come to us this night and speak to us.
How do you know?
Their rooms are below us.
She shook her head, disbelieving.
No one in this inn has privacy.
My sense of them is faint, Katza. I cannot sense everyone down to the ends of their hair, as I do you.
She sighed.
What an honor, then, to be me. They're coming in the middle of the night?
Yes.
Do they have information?
I believe they do.
Do you trust them?
Not particularly. I think they'll come soon, Katza. When they do, I'll knock on your outer door.
Katza nodded.
Very well. I'll be ready.
She stepped back into her room and pulled the door behind her. She lit a candle, splashed water on her face, and prepared herself for the arrival of the late-night merchants. Six merchants had sat around the table in the eating room and laughed at the serving girl. When Poe's knock brought her to the door, she found him standing in the hallway with all six, each carrying a candle that cast a dark light over a bearded face. They were tall and broad-backed, all six of them, enormous next to her, and even the smallest taller and broader than Poe. Quite a band of bullies. She followed them back to Poe's room.
You're awake and dressed, my lord prince, my lady,
the biggest of the merchants said as they filed into Poe's chamber. It was the man who'd first tried to grab the girl's arm, the one who'd first teased her. Katza registered the mockery as he spoke their titles. He had no more respect for them than they had for him. The one who'd taken the girl's wrist stood beside him, and those two seemed to be the leaders of the group. They stood together in the middle of the room, facing Poe, while the other four faded into the background. They were well spread out, these merchants. Katza moved to the side door, the door that led to her room, and leaned against it with her arms crossed. She was steps from Poe and the two leaders, and she could see the other four. It was more precaution than was necessary. But it didn't hurt for any of them to know she was watching.
We've been receiving visitors throughout the night,
Poe said, an easy lie.
You're not the only travelers at the inn who have information about my grandfather.
Be careful of the others, Lord Prince,
said the biggest merchant.
Men will lie for money.
Poe raised an eyebrow.
Thank you for your warning.
He slouched against the table behind him and put his hands in his pockets. Katza swallowed her smile. She rather enjoyed Poe's cocky laziness.
What information do you have for us?
How much will you pay?
I'll pay whatever the information warrants.
There are six of us.
I'll give it to you in coins divisible by six, if that's what you wish.
I meant, Lord Prince, that it's not worth our time to divulge information if you'll not compensate us enough for six men.
Poe chose that moment to yawn. When he spoke, his voice was calm, even friendly.
I won't haggle over a price when I don't know the breadth of your information. You'll be fairly compensated. If that doesn't satisfy you, you're free to leave.
The man rocked on his feet for a moment. He glanced sideways at his partner. His partner nodded, and the man cleared his throat.
Very well. We have information that links the kidnapping to King Byrne of Wester.
How interesting,
Poe said, and the farce had begun. Poe asked all the questions one would ask if one were conducting this interrogation seriously. What was the source of their information? Was the man trustworthy who had spoken of Byrne? What was the motivation for the kidnapping? Had Byrne the assistance of any other kingdoms? Was Grandfather Teelif in Byrne's dungeons? How were Byrne's dungeons guarded?
Well, lady,
Poe said, with a glance in her direction.
We'll have to send word quickly, so that my brothers know to investigate the dungeons of Byrne of Wester.
You won't travel there yourselves?
The man was surprised, and disappointed, most likely, that he hadn't managed to send Poe and Katza on a futile mission.
We go south and east, to Monsey and King Lek.
Lek was not responsible for the kidnapping.
I never said he was.
Lek is blameless. You waste your energies searching Munsee when your grandfather is in Wester.
Po yawned again. He shifted his weight against the table and crossed his arms. He looked back at the man blandly.
We don't go to Munsee in search of my grandfather. It is a social visit. My father's sister is the queen of Munsee. She's been most distressed by the kidnapping. We mean to call on her. Perhaps we can bring the comfort of your news to the Munseean court.
One of the merchants in the background cleared his throat.
A lot of sickness there,
he said from his corner.
At the Munsean court?
Poe's eyes moved to the man calmly.
Is that so?
The man grunted.
I've family in Lex Service. Distant family. Two little girls who worked in his shelter, cousins of some kind. Well, they died a few months back.
What do you mean, in his shelter?
Lex Animal Shelter. He rescues animals, Lord Prince. You'll know that.
Yes, of course, but I didn't know about the shelter.
The man seemed to enjoy being the center of Poe's attention. He glanced at his companions and lifted his chin.
Well, Lord Prince, he's got hundreds of them, dogs, squirrels, rabbits, bleeding from slashes on their backs and bellies.
Poe narrowed his eyes.
Slashes on their backs and bellies,
he repeated carefully.
You know, as if they'd run into something sharp,
the man said. Poe stared at him for a moment.
Of course. And any broken bones? Any sickness?
The man considered.
I've never heard tell of any of that, Lord Prince. Just lots of cuts and slashes that take a wondrous long time to heal. He's got a staff of children who help him nurse the little creatures to recovery. They say he's very dedicated to his animals.
Poe pursed his lips. He glanced at Katza.
I see. And do you know what sickness the girls died of?
The man shrugged.
Children are not very strong.
We've moved to a different topic now,
the biggest merchant said, interrupting.
We agreed to give you information about the kidnapping, not about this. We'll be wanting more money to compensate.
And anyway, I'm suddenly dying of a sickness called boredom,
his partner said.
Oh, ho, ho,
said the first.
Perhaps you have a more amusing diversion in mind.
With different company,
said the man in the corner. They were laughing now, the six of them chuckling over a private joke Katza had a feeling she understood.
Alas, for protective fathers and locked bedroom doors,
the partner said, very low to his friends, but not too low for Katza's sensitive ears. She surged toward the men before the burst of laughter had even begun. Poe blocked her so fast that she knew he must have started imperceptibly first.
Stop,
he said to her softly.
Think. Breathe.
The wave of impulsive anger swept over her, and she allowed his body to block her path to the merchant, to the two of them, to all six of them, for these men were all the same to her.
You're the only man in seven kingdoms who can keep that wildcat on a leash,
said one of the two men. She wasn't sure which one, for she was distracted by the effect the words had on Poe's face.
It's fortunate for us she has such a sensible keeper,
the man continued.
And you're a lucky fellow yourself. The wild ones are the most fun if you can control them.
Poe looked at her, but he didn't see her. His eyes snapped, silver ice and gold fire. The arm that blocked her stiffened, and his hand tightened into a fist. He inhaled, endlessly it seemed. He was furious. She saw this, and she thought he was going to strike the man who had spoken. And for a panicky moment, she didn't know whether to stop him or help him. Stop him. She would stop him, for he wasn't thinking. She took his forearms and gripped them tightly. She thought his name into his head.
Poe, stop. Think,
she thought into his mind, just as he had said to her.
Think.
He began to breathe out as slowly as he'd breathed in. His eyes refocused and he saw her. He turned around and stood beside her. He faced the two men. It didn't even matter which of them had spoken.
Get out.
His voice was very quiet.
We would have our payment.
Poe took a step toward the men, and they stepped back. He held his arms at his sides with a casual calmness that didn't fool anyone in the room.
"Have you the slightest notion to whom you're speaking?"
he asked.
"Do you imagine you'll receive a coin of my money when you've spoken this way? You're lucky I let you go without knocking your teeth from your mouths."
"Are you sure we shouldn't?"
Katza said, looking into the eyes of each man, one after the other.
"I'd like to do something to discourage them from touching the innkeeper's daughter."
"We won't,"
one of them gasped.
"We won't touch anyone, I swear it."
"You'll be sorry if you do. Sorry for the rest of your short, wretched lives."
"We won't, my lady, we won't."
They backed to the door, their faces white, their smirks vanished now.
"It was only a joke, my lady, I swear it."
"Get out. Your payment is that we won't kill you for your insults."
The men scrambled from the room. Poe slammed the door behind them. Then he leaned his back against the door and slid down until he sat on the floor. He rubbed his face with his hands and heaved a deep sigh. Katza took a candle from the table and came to crouch before him. She tried to measure his tiredness and his anger in the bend of his head and the hardness of his shoulders. He dropped his hands from his face and rested his head against the door. He watched her face for a moment.
"I truly thought I might hurt that man very badly."
"I didn't know you were capable of such temper."
"Apparently I am."
"Poe,"
Katza said, as a thought occurred to her.
"How did you know I intended to attack them? My intentions were toward them, not you."
"Yes, but my sense of your energy heightened suddenly. And I know you well enough to guess when you're likely to take a swing at someone."
He half-smiled tiredly.
"No one could ever accuse you of being inconsistent."
She snorted. She sat on the floor before him and crossed her legs.
"And now will you tell me what you learned from them?"
"Yes."
He closed his eyes.
"What I learned. To start with, other than that fellow in the corner, they barely spoke a true word. It was a game. They wanted to trick us into paying them for false information, to get back at us for the incident in the eating room."
"They're small-minded."
"Very small-minded, but they've helped us nonetheless. It's Lek, Katza. I'm sure of it. The man lied when he said Lek was not responsible. And yet there was something else very strange that I could make no sense of."
He shook his head and stared into his hands, thinking.
"It's so odd, Katza. I felt this strange defensiveness rise in them."
"What do you mean, defensiveness?"
"As if they all truly believed Lek's innocence and wished to defend him to me."
"But you just said Lek is guilty."
"He is guilty, and these men know it. But they also believe him innocent."
"That makes utterly no sense."
He shook his head again.
"I know, but I'm sure of what I sensed. I tell you, Katza, when the man said that Lek was not responsible for the kidnapping, he was lying. But when he said, a moment later, Lek is blameless, he meant it. He believed himself to be telling the truth."
Poe gazed up at the dark ceiling.
"Are we supposed to conclude that Lek kidnapped my grandfather, but for some innocent reason? It simply cannot be."
Katza couldn't comprehend the things Poe had learned, any more than she could comprehend the manner in which he'd learned them.
"None of this makes sense."
He came down out of his thoughts for a moment and focused on her.
"Katza, I'm sorry. This must be overwhelming to you. I'm capable of sensing quite a lot, you see, from people who want to fool me but don't know to guard their thoughts and feelings."
She couldn't understand it. She gave up trying to make sense of the king who was both guilty and innocent. She watched Poe as he became distracted by his thoughts again and stared again into his hands. The merchants hadn't known to guard their thoughts and feelings. If it was a thing that could be done, then she, at least, wanted to learn how to do it. She felt his eyes and realized he was watching her.
"You do keep some things from me."
She started, then focused on blankness for a moment.
"Or you have, since you've learned of my grace. I mean, I've felt you keeping things from me. You're doing it now. And I can tell you it works, because my grace shows me nothing. I'm always a bit relieved when it works, Katza. Truly, I don't wish to take your secrets from you."
He sat up straight, his face lit with an idea.
You know, you could always knock me unconscious. I wouldn't stop you.
Katsu laughed then.
I wouldn't. I've promised you I won't hit you, except in our practices.
But it's self-defense in this case.
It is not.
It is,
he insisted, and she laughed again at his earnestness.
I'd rather strengthen my mind against you than knock you out every time I have a thought I don't want you to know.
Yes, well, and I'd prefer that also, believe me. But I grant you permission to knock me out, if ever you need to.
I wish you wouldn't. You know how impulsive I am.
I don't care.
If you grant me permission, I'll probably do it, Poe. I'll probably...
He held up his hand.
It's an equalizer. When we fight, you hold your grace back. I can't hold my grace back, so you must have the right to defend yourself.
She didn't like it, but she could not miss his point. And she could not miss his willingness, his dear willingness, to give over his grace for her.
You will always have a headache,
she warned.
Perhaps Raffin included his salve for headaches among the medicines. I should like to change my hair now that you've changed yours. Blue would suit me, don't you think?
She was laughing again, and she swore to herself that she wouldn't hit him. She wouldn't, unless she were entirely desperate. And then the candle on the floor beside them dimmed and died. Their conversation had gotten entirely off track. They were leaving for Monsey early in the morning, most likely, and it was the middle of the night, and everyone in the inn and the town slept. Yet here they were, sitting on the floor, laughing in the dark.
We leave for Monsey tomorrow, then? We'll fall asleep on our horses.
I'll fall asleep on my horse. You'll ride as if you've slept for days, as if it's a race between us to see who reaches Monsey first.
And what will we find when we get there? A king who's innocent of the things of which he's guilty?
He rubbed his head.
I've always thought it strange that my mother and father have no suspicions about Lek, even knowing his story. And now these men seem to think him blameless in the kidnapping, even knowing he's not.
Can he be so kind in the rest of his life that everyone forgives his crimes or fails to see them?
He sat for a moment quietly.
I've wondered. It occurs to me recently that he could be graced, that he could have a grace that changes the way people think of him. Are there such graces? I don't even know.
It had never occurred to her, but he could be graced. With one eye missing, he could be graced and no one would ever know. No one would even suspect, for who could suspect a grace that controlled suspicions?
He could have the grace of fooling people. The grace of confusing people with lies. Lies that spread from kingdom to kingdom. Imagine it, Katsa. People carrying his lies in their own mouths and spreading them to believing ears. Absurd lies, erasing logic and truth all the way to lean it. Can you imagine the power of a person who had such a grace? He could create whatever reputation for himself he wished. He could take whatever he wanted and no one would ever hold him responsible.
Katsa thought of the boy who was named Heir, and the king and queen who died shortly thereafter, the advisors who supposedly jumped into the river together, and a whole kingdom of mourners who never thought to question the boy who had no family, no past, no Monsian blood flowing through his veins, but who had become king.
But his kindness, the animals, that man spoke of the animals he restores to health.
And that's the other thing. That man truly believed in Lek's philanthropy. But am I the only person who finds it a bit odd that there should be so many slashed-up dogs and squirrels in Monsey that need rescuing? Are the trees and the rocks made of broken glass?
But he's a kind man if he cares for them.
Poe peered at Katsa strangely.
You're defending him, too, in the face of logic that tells you not to, just like my parents and just like those merchants. He's got hundreds of animals with bizarre cuts that don't heal, Katsa, and children in his employ dying of mysterious illnesses, and you're not the slightest bit suspicious.
He was right. Katsa saw it, and the truth in all its gruesomeness trickled into her mind. She began to have a conception of a power that spread like a bad feeling, like a sickness itself, seizing all minds that it touched. Could there be a grace more dangerous than one that replaced sight with a fog of falseness? Katza shuddered, for she would be in the presence of this king soon enough. She wasn't certain what defense even she could raise against a man who could fool her into believing his innocent reputation. Her eyes traced Poe's silhouette, dark against the black door. His white shirt was the only part of him truly visible, a luminous gray in the darkness. She wished suddenly that she could see him better. He stood and pulled her to her feet. He pulled her to the window and looked down into her face. The moonlight caught a glimmer in his silver eye and a gleam in the gold of his ear. She didn't know why she had felt so anxious, or why the lines of his nose and his mouth, or the concern in his eyes, should comfort her.
What is it? What's bothering you?
If Lek has this grace, as you suspect...
Yes?
How will I protect myself from him?
He considered her seriously.
Well, and that's easy. My grace will protect me from him, and I'll protect you. You'll be safe with me, Katza.
In her bed, thoughts swirled like a windstorm in her mind, but she ordered herself to sleep. In an instant, the storm quieted. She slept under a blanket of calm. Chapter 19. There were two ways to get to Lek City from the inn or from any point in Sunder. One was to travel south to one of the Sunderan ports and sail southeast to Monport, the westernmost port city of the Mansian Peninsula, where a road led north to Lek City, across flatland just east of Mansi's highest peaks. This route was traveled by merchants who carried goods, and most parties containing women, children, or the elderly. The other way was shorter, but more difficult. It led southeast through a Sunderan forest that grew thicker and wilder and rose to meet the mountains that formed Mansi's border with Sunder and Estel. The path became too rocky and uneven for horses. Those who crossed the mountain pass did so on foot. An inn on either side of the pass bought or kept the horses of those who approached the mountains and sold or returned them to those who came from the mountains. This was the route Katza and Poe would take. Lek City was the walk of a day or so beyond the mountain pass, less if they purchased new horses. The walk to the city wound through valleys grown lush with the water that flowed down from the mountaintops. It was a landscape of rivers and streams, similar to that of inland Lened, Poe told Katza, or so the Mansian queen had written, which made it a landscape unlike anything Katza had ever seen. As they rode, Katza couldn't content herself with imagining the strange landscapes ahead, for when she'd awakened to morning in the Sunderan Inn, the windstorm of the night before had returned to her mind. Poe's grace would protect Poe from Lek, and Poe would protect her. With Poe, Katza would be safe. He'd said it simply, as if it were nothing. But it wasn't nothing for Katza to rely on someone else's protection. She'd never done such a thing in her life. And besides, wouldn't it be easier for her to kill Lek immediately, before he said a word or raised a finger, or gag him, immobilize him, find some way to disempower him completely, maintain control and ensure her own defense? Katza didn't need protection. There would be a solution. There would be a way for her to protect herself from Lek, if indeed he had the power they suspected. She only needed to think of it. Late in the morning, the skies began to drip. By afternoon, the drizzle had turned to rain, a cold, relentless rain that beat down and hid the forest road from their sight. Finally, they stopped, soaked to the skin, to see what they could do about shelter before night fell. The tangle of trees on either side of the road provided some cover. They tethered the horses under an enormous pine that smelled of the sap dripping from its branches with the rainwater.
It's as dry a place as we're likely to find. A fire will be impossible, but at least we won't sleep in the rain.
A fire is never impossible. I'll build it, and you find us something to cook on it.
So Poe set out into the trees with his bow, somewhat skeptically, and Katza set to work building a fire. It wasn't easy, with the world around her soaked right through. But the pine tree had protected some of the needles nestled closely to its trunk, and she uncovered some leaves and a stick or two that were not quite waterlogged. With the strike of her knife, a number of gentle breaths, and whatever protection her own open arms could give, a flame began to lick its way through the damp little tower of kindling. It warmed her face as she leaned into it. It pleased her. She'd always had a way with fires. With Al and Gideon, the fire had always been her responsibility. Further evidence, of course, that she didn't need to rely on anyone for her survival. She left the flicker of light and scrambled to find it more food. When Poe came back, dripping, to their camp, she was grateful for the fat rabbit in his hand.
"My grace is definitely still growing,"
he said, wiping water from his face.
"Since we entered this forest, I've noticed a greater sensitivity to animals. This rabbit was hiding in the hollow of a tree, and it seems to me I shouldn't have known he was there."
He stopped at the sight of her small, smoky fire. He watched as she breathed into it and fed it with her collection of twigs and branches.
"Katza, how did you manage it? You're a wonder."
She laughed at that. He crouched beside her.
"It's good to hear you laugh. You've been so quiet today. You know, I'm quite cold, though I didn't realize it until I felt the heat of these flames."
Poe warmed himself, saw to their dinner, and chatted. Katza began to open their bags and hang blankets and clothing from the lowest branches of the pine to dry them as best they could. When the meat of the rabbit was propped sizzling above the flames, Poe joined her. He unrolled their maps and held a soggy corner near the fire. He opened Raffin's packet of medicines and inspected them, setting the labeled envelopes onto rocks to dry. It was comfortable, their camp, with the drops plopping down from above and the warmth of the fire, and the smell of burning wood and cooking meat. Poe's patter of conversation was comfortable. Katza kept the fire alive and smiled at his talk. She fell asleep that night in a blanket partly dried, secure in the certainty that she could survive anywhere on her own. She woke in the middle of the night in a panic, certain that Poe had gone and that she was alone. But it must have been the tail end of a dream, snagging into her consciousness as it departed, for she could hear his breath through the even fall of rain. When she turned over and sat up, she could make out his form on the ground beside her. She reached out and touched his shoulder, just to make sure. He had not left her. He was here, and they were traveling together through the Sundaran forest to the Monsian border. She lay down again and watched the outline of his sleeping body in the darkness. She would accept his protection after all, if truly she needed it. She was not too proud to be helped by this friend. He'd helped her in a thousand ways already. And she would protect him as fiercely, if it were ever his need, if a fight ever became too much for him, or if he needed shelter, or food, or a fire in the rain, or anything she could provide. She would protect him from everything. That was settled then. She closed her eyes and slipped into sleep. Katza didn't know what was wrong with her when she woke the next morning. She couldn't explain the fury she felt toward him. There was no explanation, and perhaps he knew that because he asked for none. He only commented that the rain had stopped, watched her as she rolled her blanket, deliberately not looking at him, and carried his things to the horses. As they rode, still she did not look at him, and though he couldn't have missed the force of her fury, he made no comment. She wasn't angry that there was a person who could provide her with help and protection. That would be arrogance, and she saw that arrogance was foolishness. She should strive for humility, and there was another way he'd helped her. He'd gotten her thinking about humility. But it wasn't that. It was that she hadn't asked for a person whom she trusted, whom she would do so much for, whom she would give herself over to. She hadn't asked for a person whose absence, if she woke in the middle of the night, would distress her. Not because of the protection he would then fail to give, but simply because she wished his company. She hadn't asked for a person whose company she wished. Katza couldn't bear her own inanity. She drew herself into a shell of sullenness and chased away every thought that entered her mind. When they stopped to rest the horses beside a pond swollen with rainwater, he leaned against a tree and ate a piece of bread. He watched her, calmly, silently. She didn't look at him, but she was aware of his eyes on her, always on her. Nothing was more infuriating than the way he leaned against the tree and ate bread and watched her with those gleaming eyes.
"What are you staring at?"
she finally demanded.
"This pond is full of fish, and frogs, catfish, hundreds of them. Don't you think it's funny I should know that with such clarity?"
She would hit him for his calmness and his latest ability to count frogs and catfish he couldn't see. She clenched her fists and turned, forced herself to walk away. Off the road, into the trees, past the trees, and then she was running through the forest, startling birds into flight. She ran past streams and patches of fern and hills covered with moss. She shot into a clearing with a waterfall that fell over rocks and plummeted into a pool. She yanked off her boots, pulled off her clothing, and leaped into the water. She screamed at the cold that surrounded her body all at once, and her nose and mouth filled with water. She surfaced, coughed and snorted, teeth chattering. She laughed at the coldness and scrambled to shore. And now, standing in the dirt, the cold raising every hair of her body on end, she was calm. It was when she returned to him, chilled and clear-headed, that it happened. He sat against the tree, his knees bent and his head in his hands, his shoulders slumped, tired, unhappy. Something tender caught in her breath at the sight of him, and then he raised his eyes and looked at her, and she saw what she had not seen before. She gasped. His eyes were beautiful. His face was beautiful to her in every way, and his shoulders and hands, and his arms that hung over his knees, and his chest that was not moving because he held his breath as he watched her. And the heart in his chest. This friend. How had she not seen this before? How had she not seen him? She was blind. And then tears choked her eyes, for she had not asked for this. She had not asked for this beautiful man before her, with something hopeful in his eyes that she did not want. He stood, and her legs shook. She put her hand out to her horse to steady herself.
"I don't want this."
"Katza, I hadn't planned for it either."
She gripped the edges of her saddle to keep herself from sitting down on the ground between the feet of her horse.
You have a way of upending my plans," he said.
And she cried out and sank to her knees, then heaved herself up furiously before he could come to her and help her and touch her.
"Get on your horse, right now. We're riding."
She mounted and took off without even waiting to be sure he followed. They rode, and she allowed only one thought to enter her mind over and over.
I don't want a husband. I don't want a husband.
She matched it to the rhythm of her horse's hooves. And if he knew her thought, all the better. When they stopped for the night, she did not speak to him, but she couldn't pretend he wasn't there. She felt every move he made without seeing it. She felt his eyes watching her across the fire he built. It was like this every night, and this was how it would continue to be. He would sit there gleaming in the light of the fire, and she unable to look at him, because he glowed, and he was beautiful, and she couldn't stand it.
"Please, Katsa,"
he finally said.
"At least talk to me."
She swung around to face him.
"What is there to talk about? You know how I feel and what I think about it."
"And what I feel? Doesn't that matter?"
His voice was small, so unexpectedly small in the face of her bitterness that it shamed her. She sat down across from him.
"Poe, forgive me. Of course it matters. You may tell me anything you feel."
He seemed suddenly not to know what to say. He looked into his lap and played with his rings. He took a breath and rubbed his head. And when he raised his face to her again, she felt that his eyes were naked, that she could see right through them into the lights of his soul. She knew what he was going to say.
"I know you don't want this, Katsa, but I can't help myself. The moment you came barreling into my life, I was lost. I'm afraid to tell you what I wish for fear you'll... oh, I don't know, throw me into the fire. Or more likely, refuse me. Or worst of all, despise me,"
he said, his voice breaking and his eyes dropping from her face. His face dropping into his hands.
"I love you. You're more dear to my heart than I ever knew anyone could be. And I've made you cry. And there, I'll stop."
She was crying, but not because of his words. It was because of a certainty she'd refused to consider while she sat before him. She stood.
"I need to go."
He jumped up.
"No, Katsa, please."
"I won't go far, Poe. I just need to think, without you in my head."
"I'm afraid if you leave, you won't come back."
"Poe."
This assurance, at least, she could give him.
"I'll come back."
He looked at her for a moment.
"I know you mean that now, but I'm afraid once you've gone off to think, you'll decide the solution is to leave me."
"I won't."
"I can't know that."
"No, you can't. But I need to think on my own, and I refuse to knock you out, so you have to let me go. And once I'm gone, you'll just have to trust me, as any person without your grace would have to do. And as I have to do always, with you."
He looked at her with those naked, unhappy eyes again. Then he took a breath and sat down.
"Put a good 10 minutes between us, if you want privacy."
10 minutes was a far greater range than she'd understood his grace to encompass, but that was an argument for another time. She felt his eyes on her back as she passed through the trees. She groped forward, hands and feet, in search of darkness, distance, and solitude. Alone in the forest, Katsa sat on a stump and cried. She cried like a person whose heart is broken and wondered how, when two people loved each other, there could be such a broken heart. She couldn't have him, and there was no mistaking it. She could never be his wife. She could not steal herself back from Randa only to give herself away again, belong to another person, be answerable to another person, build her very being around another person, no matter how she loved him. Katsa sat in the darkness of the Sundaran forest and understood three truths. She loved Poe. She wanted Poe. And she could never be anyone's but her own. After a while, she began to thread her way back to the fire. Nothing had changed in her feeling, and she wasn't tired. But Poe would suffer if he didn't sleep, and she knew he wouldn't sleep until she had returned. He was lying on his back, wide awake, staring up at a half moon. She went to him and sat before him. He watched her with soft eyes and didn't say anything. She looked back at him and opened up her feelings to him so that he would understand what she felt, what she wanted, and what she couldn't do. He sat up. He watched her face for a long time.
"You know, I'd never expect you to change who you are if you were my wife,"
he finally said.
"It would change me to be your wife."
He watched her eyes.
"Yes, I understand you."
A log fell into the fire. They sat quietly. His voice, when he spoke, was hesitant.
"It strikes me that heartbreak isn't the only alternative to marriage."
"What do you mean?"
He ducked his head for a moment. He raised his eyes to her again.
"I'll give myself to you however you'll take me,"
he said, so simply that Katza found she wasn't embarrassed. She watched his face.
"And where would that lead?"
"I don't know, but I trust you."
She watched his eyes. He offered himself to her. He trusted her, as she trusted him. She hadn't considered this possibility when she'd sat alone in the forest crying. She hadn't even thought of it. And his offer hung suspended before her now, for her to reach out and claim. And that which had seemed clear and simple and heartbreaking was confused and complicated again, but also touched with hope. Could she be his lover and still belong to herself? That was the question, and she didn't know the answer.
"I need to think."
"Think here, please. I'm so tired, Katza. I'll fall right asleep."
She nodded.
"All right. I'll stay."
He reached up and wiped away a tear that sat on her cheek. She felt the touch of his fingertip in the base of her spine and fought against it, against allowing him to know of it. He lay down. She stood and moved to a tree outside the light of their fire. She sat against it and watched Poe's silhouette, waiting for him to fall asleep. Chapter 20. The notion of having a lover was to Katza something like discovering a limb she'd never noticed before, an extra arm or toe. It was unfamiliar, and she poked and prodded it as she would have prodded an alien toe, unexpectedly her own. That the lover would be Poe reduced her confusion somewhat. It was by thinking of Poe and not of the notion of a lover that Katza became comfortable enough to consider what it would mean to lie in his bed but not be his wife. It took more than the thinking of one night. They moved through the Sunderin forest, and they talked and rested and made camp as before, but their silences were perhaps a bit less easy than they had been, and Katza broke off occasionally to keep her own company and think in solitude. They did not practice fighting, for Katza was shy of his touch, and he didn't press it upon her. He pressed nothing upon her, even conversation, even his gaze. They moved as quickly as the road allowed, but the farther they traveled, the more the road resembled a trail at best, winding through overgrown gullies and around trees the size of which Katza had never seen. Trees with trunks as wide as the horses were long, and branches that groaned far above them. They had to duck sometimes to avoid curtains of vines hanging from the branches. The land rose as they moved east, and streams crisscrossed the forest floor. Their route at least provided some distraction for Poe. He couldn't stop looking around, his eyes wide.
"It's wild, this forest. Have you ever seen anything like this? It's gorgeous."
Gorgeous, and full of animals fattening themselves for winter, easy hunting and easy finding shelter. But Katza felt palpably that the horses were moving as slowly as her mind.
I think we would move faster on our feet.
You'll miss the horses when we have to give them up.
And when will that be?
It looks possibly 10 days away on the map.
I'll prefer traveling by foot.
You never tire, do you?
I do, if I haven't slept for a long time. Or if I'm carrying something very heavy. I felt tired when I carried your grandfather up a flight of stairs.
He glanced at her, eyebrows high.
You carried my grandfather up a flight of stairs?
Yes, at Randa's castle.
After a day and night of hard riding?
Yes.
His laugh burst out, but she didn't see the joke.
I had to do it, Poe. If I hadn't, the mission would have failed.
He weighs as much as you, and half as much again.
Well, and I was tired by the time I got to the top. You wouldn't have been so tired.
I'm bigger than he is, Katza. I'm stronger, and I would have been tired had I spent the night on my horse.
I had to do it. I had no choice.
Your grace is more than fighting.
She didn't respond to that, and after a moment's puzzlement, she forgot it. Her mind returned to the matter at hand, as it couldn't help but do, with Poe always before her. What was the difference between a husband and a lover? If she took Poe as her husband, she would be making promises about a future she couldn't yet see. For once she became his wife, she would be his wife forever, and no matter how much freedom Poe gave her, she would always know that it was a gift. Her freedom would not be her own. It would be Poe's to give or to withhold. That he would never withhold it made no difference. If it did not come from her, it was not really hers. If Poe were her lover, would she feel captured, cornered into a sense of forever? Or would she still have the freedom that sprang from herself? They were lying on opposite sides of a dying fire one night when a new worry occurred to her. What if she took more from Poe than she could give to him?
Poe?
She heard him turn onto his side.
Yes?
How will you feel if I'm forever leaving? If one day I give myself to you and the next I take myself away, with no promises to return?
Katza, a man would be a fool to try to keep you in a cage.
But that doesn't tell me how you'll feel, always to be subject to my whim.
It isn't your whim. It's the need of your heart. You forget that I'm in a unique position to understand you, Katza. Whenever you pulled away from me, I'll know it's not for lack of love. Or if it is, I'll know that too. And I'll know it's right for you to go.
But you're not answering my question. How will you feel?
There was a pause.
I don't know. I'll probably feel a lot of things, but only one of the things will be unhappiness. And unhappiness, I'm willing to risk.
Katza stared up into the treetops.
Are you sure of that?
He sighed.
I'm certain.
He was willing to risk unhappiness. And there was the crux of the matter. She couldn't know where this would lead, and to proceed was to risk all kinds of unhappiness. The fire gasped and died. She was frightened, for as their camp turned to darkness, she also found herself choosing risk. The next day, Katza would have given anything for a clear, straight path, for hard riding and thundering hooves to drown out all feeling. Instead, the road wound back and forth, up rises and into gullies, and she didn't know how she kept herself from screaming. Nightfall led them into a hollow, where water trickled into a low, still pool. Moss covered the trees and the ground. Moss hung from the vines that hung from the trees, and dripped into the pool that shone green like the floor of Randa's courtyard.
You seem a bit edgy. Why don't you hunt? I'll build a fire.
She allowed the first few animals she stumbled across to escape. She thought that if she plunged deeper into the forest and took more time, she might wear down some of her jitters. But when she returned to camp much later with a fox in hand, nothing had changed. He sat calmly before the fire, and she thought she might burst apart. She threw their meat onto the ground beside the flames. She sat on a rock and dropped her head into her hands. She knew what it was rattling around inside her. It was fear, plain and cold. She turned to him.
I understand why we shouldn't fight each other when one of us is angry. But is there harm in fighting when one of us is frightened?
He looked into the fire and considered her question evenly. He looked into her face.
I think it depends on what you hope to gain by fighting.
I think it'll calm me. I think it'll make me comfortable with you being near.
She rubbed her forehead, sighing.
It'll return me to myself.
He watched her.
It does seem to have that effect on you.
Will you fight me now, Poe?
He watched her for a moment longer and then moved away from the fire and motioned for her to follow. She walked after him, dazed, her mind buzzing so crazily it was numb, and when they faced each other, she found herself staring at him dumbly. She shook her head to clear it, but it did no good.
Hit me!
He paused for a fraction of a second. Then he swung at her face with one fist, and she flashed her arm upward to block him. The explosion of arm on arm woke her from her stupor. She would fight him, and she would beat him. He hadn't beaten her yet, and he wouldn't beat her tonight, no matter the darkness and no matter the whirlwind in her mind. For now that they fought, the whirlwind had vanished. Katz's mind was clear. She hit hard and fast, with hand, elbow, knee, foot. He hit hard too, but it was as if every blow focused some energy inside her. Every tree they slammed into, every root they tripped over, centered her. She fell into the comfort of fighting with Poe, and the fight was ferocious. When she wrestled him to the ground and he pushed her face away, she called out,
"Wait! Blood! I taste blood!"
He stopped struggling.
"Where? Not your mouth?"
"I think it's your hand."
He sat up and she crouched beside him. She took his hand and squinted into his palm.
"Is it bleeding? Can you tell?"
"It's nothing. It was the edge of your boot."
"We shouldn't be fighting in boots."
"We can't fight barefoot in the forest, Katza. Truly, it's nothing."
"Nonetheless..."
"There's blood on your mouth,"
he said, in a funny, distracted sort of voice that made plain how little he cared about his injured hand. He raised a finger and almost touched her lip, and then dropped his finger, as if he realized suddenly that he was doing something he shouldn't. He cleared his throat and looked away from her. And she felt it then, how near he was. She felt his hand and his wrist warm under her fingers. He was here, right here, breathing before her. She was touching him, and she felt the risk, as if it were water splashing cold on her skin. She knew that this was the moment to choose. She knew her choice. He turned his eyes back to her, and in them she saw that he understood. She climbed into his arms. They clung to each other, and she was crying, as much from relief to be holding him as from the fear of what she did. He rocked her in his lap and hugged her, and whispered her name over and over, until finally her tears stopped. She wiped her face on his shirt. She wrapped her arms around his neck. She felt warm in his arms, and calm, and safe, and brave. And then she was laughing, laughing at how nice it felt, how good his body felt against hers. He grinned at her, a wicked, gleaming grin that made her warm everywhere. And then his lips touched her throat and nuzzled her neck. She gasped. His mouth found hers. She turned to fire. Sometime later, as she lay with him in the moss, clinging to him, hypnotized by something his lips did to her throat, she remembered his bleeding hand.
"Later,"
he growled. And then she remembered the blood on her mouth, but that only brought his mouth to hers again, tasting, seeking, and his hands fumbling at her clothing, and her hands fumbling at his, and the warmth of his skin as their bodies explored each other. And after all, they knew each other's bodies as well as any lovers. But this touch was so different, straining toward instead of against.
"Poe,"
she said once, when one clear thought pierced her mind.
"It's in the medicines. There is seabane in the medicines."
And his hands and his mouth and his body returned her to mindlessness. He made her drunk. This man made her drunk. And every time his eyes flashed into hers, she could not breathe. She expected the pain when it came, but she gasped at its sharpness. It was not like any pain she had felt before. He kissed her and slowed and would have stopped, but she laughed and said that this one time she would consent to hurt and bleed at his touch. He smiled into her neck and kissed her again, and she moved with him through the pain. The pain became a warmth that grew. Grew and stopped her breath, and took her breath, and her pain, and her mind away from her body, so that there was nothing but her body and his body and the light and fire they made together. They lay afterward, warmed by each other and by the heat of the fire. She touched his nose and his mouth. She played with the hoops in his ears. He held her and kissed her, and his eyes flickered into hers.
"Are you all right?"
She laughed.
"I have not lost myself. And you?"
He smiled.
"I'm very happy."
She traced the line of his jaw to his ear and down to his shoulder. She touched the markings that ringed his arms.
"And Raffin thought we'd end this way, too. Apparently, I'm the only one who didn't see it coming."
"Raffin will make a very good king,"
Poe said, and she laughed again and rested her head in the crook of his arm.